Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I work when I sleep.
Like, you quit your job and then you start working on the brand.
How do you stay positive while dealing with so much? Like, there's nobody emailing you.
Wow, that's some amazing advice right there. I love your perspective on that. It's time to get loud. Welcome back to Loud Talk with Lavi, a podcast where we break down the walls of beauty standards one flaw at a time. And today I have such an amazing guest that I'm so excited to talk to, Priscilla Tsai. Thank you so much for joining me on Loud Talk with Lavi.
Oh my God, thank you for having me.
It is so great to speak with you and kind of get to know you. I'm really excited for that. Right off the bat, just if you can tell like me and the audience a little bit about yourself, that would be amazing.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. So I'm Priscilla, the founder and CEO of CocoKind. I have been, really building CocoKind for the past 8 to 9 years.
Wow.
So it's really been an amazing long journey so far, and we're still going. But a little bit about me. So I grew up in Michigan, so born and raised in Michigan, and grew up with two Taiwanese immigrant mom and dad. And my parents came here to pursue their master's and PhD. They met here and they ended up in Michigan, and I was born there and really loved it there. I was like such a Midwesterner at heart, even though people think I'm such an East, I like give off East Coast vibes, but I went to school in Philly and New York, Philly. And then I moved to New York for 4 years after school. Since then, though, I've been in San Francisco building CocoKind. So, I have an amazing husband here and two little boys. I have a almost 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And so basically between work and then, you know, family life and everything, like that's pretty much like my entire life right now. And really, really fortunate to have like a lot of amazing support systems in both worlds. So, but yeah, really happy to be here today.
That's amazing. Well, I'm definitely excited to get into all of that and, go into more detail and everything. So first off, you said you mentioned going to school on the East Coast. What did you do, in school?
So I majored in finance and accounting, and I went to an undergraduate business school. And, the long story is that my mom is a small business entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and I grew up going to her office. I grew up stuffing flyers and kind of like stapling her catalogs and stuff like that. And so I, you know, very much was exposed to this idea of business from like a really, really young age, like,
right.
You know, 4 years old. And so for, you know, my whole growing up, I always said that I wanted to have a business. And so I decided to go to business school, an undergrad business school. And, but I didn't really realize that going to, business school means, you know, it's not really business. It's like a lot of finance. So
yeah.
A lot of ending up in like investment banking and, you know, and sales and trading. And so I kind of just like, I was so young and I just did that. And all of a sudden I like, before you even look up, I just found myself like recruiting for banking jobs and stuff like that when I was in college. And
mm-hmm.
So I actually ended up working in finance for the first 4 years of my career. And the most recently, before I started CocoKind, I was at JP Morgan.
Okay.
And I was an equity research analyst. And equity research analysts are people who basically like analyze a stock of various companies and different sectors that you focus on. And, you know, you help provide some research and some guidance on, you know, what basically you think the stock will do. to investors. And so that's basically what I did. It's a really cool job, actually, for especially for recent graduates, because I got to like meet with CEOs of companies. I mean, I was like the tiny analyst in the corner of the room taking notes, like definitely not talking, but I was in the room listening to like really amazing CEOs of these public companies talk about their businesses. And I actually, and I covered Whole Foods stock, and that was a company that I was really inspired by because, you know, so much of their platform is like using business to further impact. And I was really inspired by that, you know, entire, like very mission-based company. And so that was like a big reason where, you know, a big kind of propeller into why I also kind of doubled down on like, I want to start my own business one day too. So yeah, so I kind of did that for 4 years, and then I ultimately started to Copenhagen.
Right. And taking it back to kind of the beginning days, like you mentioned, you know, you grew up seeing your mom in that small business entrepreneurship role. And did you kind of know from a young age, like, I want to kind of also be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't even know why, but I was really like, that was just my thing. Like I always knew that I was going to, I was very exposed to business, you know, between both my parents. I think both my parents are, you know, really excellent business people in different, completely different fields, and totally made it on their own. And so, you know, me and my siblings were all exposed to business and work and hard work and, you know, kind of making it for yourself, like a really, really early age. And so that definitely made me want to become a business person. You know, I think I was like 5 years old when I would tell people that.
Right. No, I love hearing that, because I definitely grew up with like a similar perspective. And it's interesting how, like, you know, I never knew exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew it was going to be something that I kind of like create on my own.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, I never really knew, okay, like, what is that going to be? You kind of just like, I think, I don't want to say fall into it, but you kind of like just build the path along that way. And what you mentioned with school too, like, I, you know, taking business right now, like, I can say the things I learn in school and the things I learn, like, you know, on my own is completely different. Like, it goes from like textbook theory to like actual real life application. So it's so different than actually like doing business like in the real world, I think. Obviously, you need the theory and like all the accounting and financing. It's definitely important to know and understand, but it's a whole different world. I do want to ask you, because you mentioned, you know, how after 4 years of working kind of more of like a corporate job, let's say, did you kind of know, like, during that time, was it there kind of like a timeline for you, like, okay, I'm gonna work this job for, let's say, 4 years, like you mentioned, and then I'm gonna start my own business? Or was it more kind of an overnight thing?
It wasn't, you know, it's kind of, it's been so long that it's kind of like, I have to go back to like what my train of thinking was. You know, it was 2013 is when I quit my job at JP Morgan, August. And so, you know, over 10 years ago now. And I think for me, it was the idea that I knew that I was going to start a business. And I almost was so naive that I felt confident enough that that was the right time. And people who know me, like, I am a quick decision maker. I am somebody who, I wouldn't say necessarily like, well, it's definitely a defining characteristic that, like, I am somebody who like walks the talk. Like, if I say that I'm going to do something, like, I'm going to do something. And so I think that it just became this thought in my head. And I was really kind of naively confident. I kind of had this whole like growing up of like years and years of thinking I'm going to do something and be like, yeah, this is it. And I didn't even, like, to your point, like, it was a little overnight because I didn't even really think too much about it. And thankfully, you know, I also, I had really supportive parents who were like, just very emotionally like, yeah, like, you know, they didn't even really understand what I was doing, honestly, but they were just like, they tell me like they knew that I was going to figure it out, you know, so they were very supportive of me quitting my job generally, which, like, you know, quitting a six-figure job when you're like 24, you know, because I graduated when I was 20 and so it was really young, right? Or 24, 25. And it's a kind of a big deal. And like a lot of, like, you know, not to stereotype, but a lot of traditional Asian families would be like, that's crazy. You know, I think I'm really lucky because I had very entrepreneurial parents who like totally got it and they believed in me. some, even if they questioned me, especially when I was sitting at home as like a 25-year-old in Michigan in their home and like watching Bravo TV at Friday night and like on my laptop, they were like, what is she doing? She went from being like so independent to like now being at home, like,
Right.
you know, and there was a period there where they questioned it a little bit, but they were always very supportive, and I was really lucky to have that.
That's so amazing to hear. And like you said, I think there is, a lot of like pressure on that. I know even for myself now, people ask me, okay, so are you gonna get a like engineering job like after you graduate? And I did like an engineering internship. I kind of got a taste of like that world, but I just think I want to like get my degree and then kind of keep moving forward with what I've built up on my own. And if all else fails, I can always like go back and get a
Yeah.
traditional job, but might as well give it a shot. And every time I mention that, people do kind of like look at me kind of weird because they just like don't understand it. I would say by now my parents, they understand what I do completely in this
Yeah.
influencing world and all of that. But it definitely took time. I remember like the first time a brand wanted to send me PR, they were like, this is a scam. There's no way this is
Right.
like real.
Right,
But
right, right.
now they get it. So that's so amazing to hear that your parents were supportive in that. But how did you feel during that time? Like, was there any fear? I know you mentioned kind of that feeling of like being a little bit naive, jumping fully into this world, but was there any fear in the back of your mind, like, what if this doesn't work,
Not really. Again, I was so naive and so like hungry and ambitious, and I believed in myself. So I knew that if one thing didn't work, then another thing would, and you know that I would land on my feet. I think, yeah, I think I had enough like examples, even though they were smaller examples for sure, but I had enough examples in my life of like things that I had overcome, or things that, you know, I kind of not landed the way that I thought it was going to land, and I still landed on my feet at the end of the day. And so I don't know. I always kind of believed in myself.
That's good to hear. And do you think that's kind of a characteristic that, the majority of entrepreneurs should have to be able to kind of be successful in that path?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think I it's funny because I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, you know, at least speaking for myself, I definitely have a lot of belief in myself, and there's an optimism that you can't really like, there's a special like founder optimism that's always, you know, it's necessary to do the job. At the same time, you know, I'm like also a very critical person too. And in some ways can be like pessimistic in some ways, and it's kind of about balancing those of not pessimistic, like I don't not believe in myself, but you're always kind of expecting the worst and you're preparing for the worst. You're a little bit paranoid all the time. And, you know, I also am like a really critical person generally. And so, you know, if something is, you know, that I'm seeing that I could have done better or whatever it is, like I'm definitely like really in tune with that. So you kind of have to like quiet some voices, and you have to amplify some others, you know, and it is a little bit of a battle in your head of like, you know, kind of how do you stay positive while dealing with so much? Because you really, you know, it's not an easy journey, and you are constantly dealing with problems. It's just not normal, you know, and you have a lot of responsibility. And so I think the optimism and the positivity, the self-belief is absolutely, you know, necessary, because there's so many other emotions that will constantly tug away at you.
Definitely. And at the start of CocoKind, did you kind of go fully at first into it? Like you quit your job and then you started working on the brand, or was there a bit of overlap there where then you decided to go full time with working on your business, or how did that look like?
Yeah, so interestingly, so when I left JP Morgan,
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I actually started this distribution business of US organic goods to Hong Kong. So it was like organic, like vitamins and children's vitamins and snacks, and you know, from these like independent companies that, you know, were then I would literally put on a pallet myself because, you know, going back to I covered Whole Foods stock. So I would go to these like industry trade shows and I would meet a bunch of these like really cool companies that were brand new and today they're huge. They're all these like amazing companies that we know today that were like changing the food movement using really amazing ingredients and, you know, and healthier ingredients. And that market was still very new in Asia and Hong Kong, but there was a demand for it. But the thing is, a lot of these small companies, they wouldn't like ship directly to Hong Kong. They would, you know, it's just like they didn't know how to do that. But if they talked to me when I was going to the trade shows, they would happily sell me and I wouldn't buy that much. I would sell, you know, I would buy maybe 200 units or 300 units or something. And then what I would do is I would just pack that up and consolidate it and ship it to these relationships in Hong Kong that I literally made going door to door. So after JP Morgan, I spent a month in Hong Kong. And I literally got like this like importer list of like Hong Kong natural and organic stores that are like trying to carry these like, you know, imported goods. And so I literally went door to door and I ultimately found, you know, not a lot, but I had like 5 to 10 customers there that had a bunch of stores on the island. And I basically ended up, you know, just being able to consolidate these like US goods to Hong Kong. And I would like palletize it myself. I had a mini warehouse and that helped me with my basic like day-to-day expenses. And I did that while I started CocoKind. And right. That was kind of like what held me over in terms of like just having dollars to live on and all that stuff. And so I actually did that for even after launching CocoKind, I still did that for like a year. But I ultimately, you know, sunsetted that business, but I kind of had that business to carry mm-hmm. over while I was building the brand and the products.
Wow, that's cool to hear kind of that journey. And I really want to ask you about, you know, how you mentioned you were 25, like sitting at your parents' house. So during that time, like, were you kind of on your own when you were working at JP Morgan, then did you move back in mm-hmm. with your parents? Okay. Because I want to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I lived in New York and I quit my job. And then I went to Hong Kong mm-hmm. for a month. And then after that, I spent like three, four months in my parents' house, you know, growing up in Michigan. And I would like work at my mom's office, like on my own thing, but I would just set up shop there and I would go with her to work every day. And yeah, I was like, also, I was like single at the time, and like my mom was like, "Oh my god, like what is she doing? She's in Michigan. She was like living so independently, had
right?
This, like, you know, fun social life in New York and working a lot, and but you know, having a social life, having so many of her college friends, and like I moved back home in Michigan and didn't have any of that, and so mm-hmm. you know, I was kind of like on my own, like very isolated land with my parents, and I had a great time with them. Like I still remember going to Japan with them that winter for Christmas, and like." I was joking, like, it's the three of us. And like, they were just like, like, I hope you get married one day.
Yeah.
they're like, is she going to like, you know, like have a social life?
Right.
But then I ultimately left Michigan because my mom was like, hey, maybe you should like go stay with your sister. Because she lives in San Francisco and that she's like, there's more young people in San Francisco.
Right.
So my mom's like, maybe you should go like crash on your sister's couch. So I then moved to my sister's couch for a couple months in San Francisco. And then I ultimately like rented my own place in San Francisco. But yeah, so I had like almost like 9 months-ish mm-hmm. of like this like transition period, whether it was on my parents', my old bedroom, growing up bedroom, or my sister's couch.
Right. And I wanted to kind of, you know, bring that up a bit more once you mentioned that, because I feel like a lot of people in their 20s feel like, I don't know, some sort of weird way, and they feel like they're taking steps back if they're like going back to their parents or going back to their hometown.
Totally.
And that's why I wanted to ask you about that, because I think a lot of people feel like that judgment. There's really like no reason to feel that way, you know. There's mm-hmm. circumstances where that's just the best option to have, and I think it's great that you're very open and talking about that. And I think to anyone listening, that's going to be a great like inspiring thing to hear, that it's okay to do that, and like, you know,
totally.
Your life isn't over in those
I remember it was weird for me to like during that time period of, especially when I was in Michigan, not so much when I was in San Francisco, but people were definitely like, you know, my friends and everything, they were just like surprised that I was like in Michigan. Mm-hmm. But again, I didn't really care, you know, like I
Right.
was like, I knew that I was on path. I knew it was a stepping stone. I knew I had shit to do, you know, and I was
Yep.
like, I wasn't gonna waste money while doing that. And so like, that's the thing about me too. It's like, I'm always very authentic to myself. And like, once I, like, I don't know, I feel pretty secure in those decisions, even if it feels contrarian or a little bit weird or a little bit like off. And sometimes you just do, you have to do what you gotta do, and you have to be like, you know, shameless about it, because
Yep.
you know, ultimately it is a stepping stone, and there's absolutely nothing embarrassing about saving
Oh,
money.
absolutely. And I love that you're transparent about that, and the fact that you also said like you just knew your path and you didn't really care about what others had to say. And I totally agree with that. I was moved out last year, like throughout all my internship, and I just moved back home because it's easier while I'm in school. It's easier
Yeah.
for filming content. And I'm like,
Absolutely.
might as well save some money. So
Totally.
there's no shame in it. But just for anyone listening, that's a good reminder that there's no shame in that at all. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, obviously you already touched on saying like you really were in that mindset, like where you didn't care about whether, you know, what other people thought and you were on this path. And what's any advice you can give to someone who maybe is kind of wanting to take that leap of like a goal they have set out, but they're scared of like what other people have to say, especially in those beginning days when obviously you're having to put in a lot of work and you're not necessarily seeing like the huge return, and it can be stressful sometimes where everyone's friends and family's eyes are kind of on you and they're like, so how's the business going or whatever? Like, what's your advice to anyone kind of going through that or like kind of fearing going through that if they haven't started yet?
Yeah, I think it's just to, you know, again, believe in yourself, and to, you know, kind of dream really big, because like, those in the beginning, no one is going to give you like affirmation, right? Like,
Right.
it's just, it's really important to understand, like, being a founder, starting anything new, or doing anything yourself, building anything, is not like the job that you do if you're looking for affirmation. Like, it's really a hard thing to do. It's a very lonely thing to do, no matter what. And
Right.
so you have to be that person to like dream big, and to like have this like dream be your constant source of energy and confidence, and, you know, ability to storytell and communicate. And that's where you yourself have to be the number one like believer and salesperson of this dream. So maybe you haven't started anything yet, and you're like, instead of being like, oh, I'm not launched yet, like, I'm, you know, it's coming soon, you could be like, I'm building this amazing product. I'm really excited for it to be coming out next year. Like,
Right.
you know what I mean? Like, there, it's just a difference in tone and energy that you put forth, where it can really be like a positive thing, and you can come into it with confidence, not like this, your own kind of skepticism, or your own, you know, kind of like insecurities, which I know that like that's 100% there. But, you know, when you communicate it for yourself mostly, you want to communicate it a lot with like confidence.
Right, that kind of change in mindset of how you frame it. I think that's so important, definitely. What would you say are like the top traits that would differentiate, you know, a founder? Because obviously not everyone in the world is made for like entrepreneurship or like being a founder, or else like obviously no company would ever work that way. So what are like the top traits that you would say would differentiate someone from being a founder versus, you know, maybe working out better in a more traditional job?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these days, like, just the idea of like founders are so, you know, unique, and everybody has their own story, you know, and it really, everybody has their own story, their own journey, their own motivations. So it's a little bit hard to say overall. And I think, you know, to be honest, I think there's like a, there's a little bit of like a founder on pedestal situation, you know, that's going on, that is a little bit hard, because founders, like everybody else, have insecurities, have weaknesses, have issues, personal issues, professional issues. Like, there's a lot of things that, you know, and by the way, like, you can be just as successful, quote unquote, you know, as a founder or not as a founder, you know, contributing to the workforce. So, you know, I do want to like qualify that, because I think that truly people don't really get it when it's out there and said that like it's truly not for everyone, and
Right.
it shouldn't be. It doesn't
Yeah.
have to be. And there's so many ways to be successful, right? But that being said, I do think that like, at least from what I've seen, one of the defining characteristics are people who are biased for action. You know, it's like, it's anybody can talk about an idea, anybody can say an idea, but it's the people who actually do it that make a difference. And you don't even, I think that like a lot of times people with the most innovative ideas fail because they don't know how to act, and people with the least innovative ideas succeed because they know how to act, you know, and it's like the action succeeds all, you know. So that kind of to me is like what I've seen time and time again from people that I've known, you know, that have amazing businesses.
Wow, that's some amazing advice right there. And to anyone who maybe isn't like as comfortable taking that like full leap of faith, like quitting their job or whatever, and they have all these ideas, what would you recommend that case? Because I always tell like my friends and stuff who have all these ideas, I'm like, well, just start working on it now. It doesn't matter if like you're in school, or at least just start somewhere, right? So
yeah,
I'll get your perspective on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of the advice people, when people are like, hey, I want to start something, I don't know where to start. It's like, I didn't know where to start either.
Yeah.
But you start somewhere and you just do one small thing at a time. And I think that's what people, like, there is no playbook, right? Nobody's going to tell you, you know, no, it doesn't matter how deep your network is, how many people you know, how many mentors you may or may not have. Like, no one is going to be there every step of the way,
yeah,
guiding you every hour of the day. And
absolutely.
So you... that's a big part of like, when I remember when I was just started CocoPain, you know, like your inbox is like zero, like there's nobody emailing you, you know, like it sounds, today I have like tons of email every day. I'm like, oh my God, I have to like get to my inbox and like, you know, reply to people or figure this out or do that. None of that is happening in the beginning. You're
right.
On your own and nobody is asking anything of you. And that's a really scary thing. Right. And so you kind of have to figure out, how do I put one foot in front of the other? And I think where people get the most tripped up is it becomes this overwhelming thing. Like, I have to start. No, it's like, okay, well, you have to start with, you know what, today I'm going to just research what colors I love for my brand. I'm going to research what ingredients I want to use. Like, I want to research what steps of products I want to launch with. Like, you know, it's like, just like one thing at a time, you know.
Absolutely.
These are small things that are really exciting. And that's how I basically started. It was like, I started with like one step at a time, and every single day was like so exciting. I like love what I was doing. I love when I was learning, and I love like, oh wow, like it happened. Like I got, you know, this, I don't know what formula together or this or that. Like it was really exciting to see it all come together. And so that like was very much like energy for me. So I think my biggest advice is like one small step at a time can create like really big dreams. And so, you know, just try not to get overwhelmed by like thinking of these big steps that you have to
Yeah.
take.
I think also into that, like, yeah, for sure, just taking those small steps every day. Cause I know, I mean, I wouldn't say I like fell into this whole like business of content creating, but I started off just as like a passion project when I was like 13 on YouTube, and now it's just become like my full-time job.
Yeah.
But
Oh.
last year, like back in September, I launched my own skincare brand. It's mainly targeted towards men with my business.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Partner, and I remember when we started like working on like just from the very get-go of like the starting idea to now, and every day we'd meet and then it'd be like, okay, what do we want to do today? And it's like we had so many things to do, and sometimes you're right, like it would get so overwhelming because it's like we have so much to do until we like could launch. That was our goal at that point, but we just had to like work on one thing at a time. And I remember when we launched, you know, I did have a bit of that insecurity, like what if this fails, what if blah blah, or like that comparison to like other brands and everything. And I remember he said to me, he's like, you know what, Lavinia, like we've started, you know, like we launched, and that's like the first step. Like from here on out, like it's gonna obviously take work. And I'm like, yes, you're right, like it's gonna take a lot of work, but it's just really about starting. And with that, I want to ask too, like how did you kind of navigate, and if you had this experience at all, like the whole comparison game of, especially with like social media, I think, and kind of glorifying entrepreneurship in some ways. Did you at times like compare yourself to bigger brands or other founders at all in that process?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I did and I do now, you know, like it's still a thing. And I think it's a natural, like, you know, human characteristic. It's unrealistic. Like, I'm not gonna, like, you know, feel jealous from time to time. I think what I, through the years, because I've seen many companies come and go, I've seen many companies come and succeed further, you know, quote unquote. And, you know, I think one of the things I kind of realized through time, because again, I have the luxury of having been doing this for a while, and just matured through this process very much, I kind of realized that, like, you can't, everybody's, like, journey of, like, happiness is so different, you know, and you can't tell everything. First of all, it's, you know, always what they say, it's half the story online, right? Like, there's so much more that is untold, and there's struggles that are untold. We all know that everybody has struggles that aren't shown, but sometimes it's hard to recognize. But not only that, I realized that, like, you know, my purpose and my, like, idea of happiness is really different than what somebody else is. And so, you know, right now, like, this particular journey that I'm on, like, I'm really happy with, you know, and I don't know, you know, if that's something that, like, I can compare to other people at all, you know, and their happiness level. And I'm also, like, working for something different. So, and I think everybody has a different goal. So, you know, again, it's like, I try to remember there's a lot that you don't see. And also my particular goal, my particular, like, pursuit of happiness is really unique too.
Absolutely. And just kind of recognizing, like, everyone's on a different journey. And like you said, like, what makes one person happy might not make the next happy. So that's an amazing perspective. With that, I want to ask too, like, I think this could be helpful for anyone listening as well. What are some of the things that you think social media kind of glorifies about entrepreneurship? And what are more things that you wish people did know maybe before either going into it themselves or making a judgment on entrepreneurship? What's kind of your perspective there?
Yeah, I mean, I think entrepreneurship is, like, it's what people expect. It's like, it's really, really hard. I think what's shown on social media a lot of times is, you know, a glorified version. So it's, you know, a founder that is, you know, has shit together in all the ways of life, and that is out there on panels, you know, marketing products, like, running in front of a Target sign saying my products are here now. And, you know, all that stuff, which is all, those are all amazing, truly, like, amazing parts of the journey. What aren't parts of the journey are so many, the majority of your days, right? Like, the majority, not only of your days, but the hours in the day are not those times. And you're dealing with problems, you're dealing with challenges, you're dealing with rejections, and you're dealing with a lot of anxiety. You're dealing with a lot of can't shut it off at night. I always say, like, I work when I sleep. And that's not, like, I'm not even, like, making that up. Like, I will literally dream about work, about, like, real work things. And I'll be like, oh, okay, like, so then I wake up being like, okay, yeah, I have to do this and this and this. Like, I legitimately, like, have those dreams where I'm working. Or I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm thinking about an issue, you know? And like that happens most days, not some days, most days. And so, like, it's really a decision that you're making to have, like, to have a successful business.
Yeah.
The more successful you are, the more stuff you're dealing with, you know, and more of an investment it is for your whole life. Like, it's an investment for my partner, my husband, to be making that I have this business, you know. It's an investment for my kids to be making that their mom works so much. Like, you know, it's an investment that we as a family are making, but also one that we're making for my happiness, because it's what makes me happy too, right? And so, but it is something that, like, it comes with a lot of costs, and I don't think that is, you know, often showed. And of course, there's a lot of people who do not have, you know, it does not end up going the right way. And that, you know, that also is, like, really painful. It's really, really painful, you know, when things don't go the right way either. So there's just a lot, I think, psychologically that you have to deal with.
What about, like, managing kind of expectations? Because if people do go online, they see, like you mentioned, those great moments of, you know, the founder standing in front of their line at a shop or whatever, right? And people might build up those expectations or kind of think that it'll be, like, an overnight success. Like, what's your advice to kind of manage those expectations? And like you said, like, you've been working on this for 9 years, I think you mentioned, right? So what can you say to any young entrepreneurs that kind of feel discouraged when they're not seeing, like, that instant gratification come?
Yeah, I think again, it's, you know, and I give this advice all the time, like you should expect rejection. Like
Same.
that's the status quo.
Yeah.
Like you know, a couple people actually over the past like couple months, like separately, you know, have given me this you know, via DMs and stuff, and I try to get back to people, but you know, just kind of like I've been facing a lot of rejections. Like, what advice would you give me? And my advice is like, that's the status quo, you know, like that is what you should expect. And you're
Right.
going to get a lot of silences, or you're going to get a lot of no's, explicit no's. And like, if you're not expecting that and you're not okay with that, like, it might, like, honestly, the harsh me would be like, this isn't for you.
Right.
You have to be okay with that. You
Yeah.
have to be resilient, because there's going to be a thousand times that pressure and that negativity one day when you are successful. By the way, like there is a lot of stuff that you're constantly dealing with. I can't stress that enough. The problems exist out of everywhere. It's, you know, it's just, you're just dealing with a living, breathing business. You know, there's always going to be things that happen. And so, you know, it's that idea of like getting back up and falling and getting back up and falling, getting back up. To me, after doing this for so many years, it gives me a lot of energy. So when I'm dealing with something and I'm falling off, like I get energy being like, this is making me stronger. And
Right.
I know that, because I know that the next time this happens to me, it's either not going to happen to me again because I'm going to know how to avoid it, or I'm going to deal with it so much more, you know, impactfully and with more strength than I did this time. And so that's kind of what I remember. I feel like building a business in a lot of ways is like you have to be an athlete. You know, like sometimes like, and I say this to my team too, it's like different teams sometimes are in the different spotlight, right? And where we're all on the same team, but like you're kind of in different spotlights. You're also having to build resilience. You're also having to train. You have to practice. You have to, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and that's all part of the sport, you know. And I do think the resilience is, and the endurance is like half the battle.
I love your perspective on that. And I just the other day I saw, I mean, it's like one of those like kind of cheesy inspirational quote things, but it said like no stands for next opportunity. And I love that type of
Yeah,
perspective you have, because
totally.
like you have to be willing to take it. And I think even when people ask me like, and they want to get into content creation, they're like, okay, well, how do you like handle the hate comments? I'm like, you have to be ready for it. Like you're gonna get 50% bad comments, 50% some videos might be like all hate comments. Like it's just the way it goes, and it's just part of the industry. So I think you have an amazing perspective on that. Kind of switching gears to going back to CocoKind and how that all started, did you know that you wanted to get into the beauty space, or did that kind of like where did that idea evolve for you?
Yeah, it you know, it was totally not in my ambition. You know, as a girl growing up, I you know, had really bad skin. I just dealt with a lot of acne and or like bad skin, right? Like I had a lot of acne. I had cystic acne. I had it on my face, my chest, my back. Like it was like a big thing. Like, you know, to prom, it had to like cover up my back, or I had to wear high back shirts in the summer. Like I was really insecure about my skin. I would avoid going to like daytime parties in college because I just like felt like, you know, it just like my skin was like too much in the sunlight and spotlight, and it would get red and blotchy, and you know, was really, really, really insecure about it. So like having a beauty company is literally the last thing on earth that I thought that I would have a business doing. And you know, when I think about my parents, when I talk about my parents like questioning it, like they never questioned me as a business person or like an entrepreneur, but they definitely had questions for me when I said that I was starting a skincare company, because they knew I didn't have perfect skin. I still had really like break prone skin, and I was dealing with still cystic acne when I started CocoKind. And so they were just like, but why, like you know, like, and they knew insecurity. So, you know, definitely not. I think though my issues with my skin and my skincare and all that I dealt with there led me to this like deep exploration of products and ingredients and skin barrier and hydration. And you know, just like my skin had become so sensitized that like I would put on lotion in the dark because it would sting so badly my eyes would water, and my skin would become bright red. And then I would take, you know, so much foundation, and I would just cover it all up with a brush, and then I wouldn't be comfortable leaving the door, not even to like literally get food delivery in the lobby of my building in New York without doing that. It was such a horrible process for me that I just like had learned so much and I had spent so much money. And all that kind of led me to being like secretly really passionate about skincare, but I never told people because, again, you see someone who has like acne all over and they tell you they're passionate about skincare, like, you're just like asking for people to stare at your skin, and that would make me feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So honestly, a lot of the reason why when I quit JP Morgan and I told people that I was starting a distribution business for natural and organic food, I didn't even feel comfortable telling people. And this is kind of going back to my learning of like my advice for people, right? Like I didn't even feel comfortable, but I would say that was more from a skin perspective, my like big insecurity with my skin of telling people that I was starting a skincare business. And I ultimately convinced myself that I was going to do this by saying that I was going to be like super behind the scenes. And I never had to be in front of a camera like this. And so, that's kind of like I just all my issues with skin and skincare led to, me really feeling like I could build a skincare product and company differently. And, at a really like nice price point that wasn't gonna like break the bank and sold in accessible retailers with really good ingredient first, kind of philosophy, investing in the formula, not on crazy packaging, so that, people who really had skin problems like I did, like knew that they were getting something that they were paying for, not something else. And so ultimately, like that kind of led me to start CocoKind and decide to do it, even if I was like kind of like incognito for a little bit.
Right. Thank you for opening up about all of that. I really appreciate you sharing your story, and I definitely relate to a lot of it because as someone who like struggles with hormonal acne and I'm like in the midst of my whole journey, it doesn't take away from the fact of what I know about skin, like being chemical engineering. I've worked in R&D for skincare. Like I think I understand skincare really well. Unfortunately, I'm just like going through a lot of change with my hormone imbalance and everything, which is obviously react like making my skin react. And I have felt like kind of what you mentioned there, that like judgment when I do mention to people, one, that I like, am like a beauty creator. And then two, now that I've just launched a skincare brand, sometimes like for people who don't know me personally or don't.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Don't follow my content. They do look at me a bit weird because they're like, why would I kind of take advice from you? But I think those of us who have struggled with our skin kind of know it best because they're, like we're very careful about what we apply because there's so much sensitivity and anything can kind of cause like additional breakouts and stuff. So, no, it's great to hear that. Not that you struggled with that, but like that you kind of overcame that and tried to build something differently. I do want to ask, just out of curiosity, what was the inspiration behind the name CocoKind?
It's like super random, but one, somebody had told me that brands that start with C are more so likely to be successful. Like, definitely, I don't even remember who told me that. It definitely was not anybody of like experience or something. It was probably like some super random thing I heard, and I didn't know. So I was like, sure. And then I really like the word kind. And so then I was kind of like, okay, like, I just was like, alliteration sounds great. And it was like CocoKind. And that was basically how it started.
That's cool. I like it. I mean, like, it's a cute name. I think it's definitely fitting for the brand. I guess like with, obviously the beauty industry, it's a very saturated place. So was there any fear for you like entering that market? Or again, did that kind of play back into that naive kind of, look that you had on things when you entered the space?
Yeah, I think it was naive. Also, when I started, it was 20, 15. Like, so actually it wasn't nearly as saturated as it today. Like the industry has
Right.
changed so much in 8, 9 years, So yeah, like there was more space then. Today, I do think it's hard for people to like, unless you're coming with a specific angle that's different or unsaturated in some for some reason. Mm-hmm. I do think it's hard, you know, just to start a skincare brand today. And I'm really open about the fact that if I started today, I don't think I would have been successful. Like, I think timing is important.
Right.
And it is an environment today that is really daunting, for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, that, yeah, you're definitely right. I know a lot of people kind of talk about that now. And I mean, since you did start in 2015, did you have to kind of go through like transitions with like taking on social media and learning that aspect of things with your branding as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, when I started, Instagram was like brand new. I barely had my own personal Instagram.
Right.
And my personal Instagram, you know, it was like at that age where it was like, oh, you get like 10 likes per photo.
Yeah.
Like literally you're like 10 friends. Because some of your friends aren't on it yet. You know, like it was
right.
like that. And so, and yeah, like it was also at the age where people were really using hashtags. So I would like go and hashtag like skincare or like go and like see the hashtag skincare. And I would like thousands of posts and just hoping that people would follow based on seeing me like their posts or comment or, you know, it was like back in the day, like that, right? Like
right.
So early on like that. And it wasn't even until 2017 where stories existed. So stories didn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years into it, stories existed. And that's actually when I finally started to be in front of the camera. It wasn't because I wanted to, it's because like, oh, well, there's a stories thing and like, I have to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like no one else is going to do it. And I don't have anybody else to do it. So I basically started doing it and I would show people what happened. Like if I had a breakout, which I would still have many breakouts, I would show people how I was caring for it. And it was because of stories that I became so much more comfortable not wearing makeup because I would do that. And, you know, initially I'm like, okay, well, I have like, you know, I had followers at that point, maybe like 20,000 followers or something on the account. And it wasn't a little, but it was like, okay, well, stories is only going to reach like, you know, a couple thousand people. So it's not that big of a deal. So I like come in and it like goes away. So I'd do it, do these tutorials. And like, I would literally get like more DMs than we get back today in our stories. Like I would get 100 DMs back of like, oh, thank you for showing me how to use this product. Thank you for showing your real skin. Like I'm dealing with this breakout too. Or like, haha, that was so funny. Like, you know, cause I would just be myself. And like, I wasn't intending to be in front of the camera, but people gave me so much affirmation, as I'm sure you get too, right? It's like all the people who judge you. And then it just takes like the one or two or the 100 mm-hmm. people who comment on your post being like, thank you so much for showing your real skin.
Yeah.
That's why you keep doing it. You know, that's why, you know, it should exist. And so like, I became so much more comfortable through doing that. And then I would like literally within a year, I was like going on stories and all this stuff, like with no makeup, none whatsoever, you know, like, and that was never something that like, again, I would put on makeup just to get food delivery.
Right.
Like to open the door. Like I couldn't imagine like doing that online. And so I really credit social media and the business for like helping me become really confident, not really, but like confident in my skin, even when I, you know, didn't feel like it was the best. And so, yeah, I absolutely had to grow with social media.
That's great to hear. And I think especially like, you know, even 2017, there weren't really any like skin positivity, you know, people posting things like now, like, as you said, like, people always comment on my stuff saying like, I never see this, but I think now there are more people who do what I do. But back then, like, I don't think anyone was really doing anything like that. So that's amazing that you kind of grew into that and that it helped also build your confidence more as well. And that's one of the best parts, I think, about social media. And, you know, one of those great aspects that it can bring is just making that community build really strong. And then, which can also help with everyone's confidence. Cause I'm sure as you were boosting up your own confidence, whoever was watching the video is also getting that boost of confidence from that as well. So that's super cool.
Yeah.
I guess moving on to the next thing that I want to touch on before we end here. And obviously, you know, the theme of this podcast is breaking down those walls of beauty standards. What are some of your goals, I think, with CocoKind that you have already done and then you want to keep moving forward with to bring your message out and be different from the rest of the beauty industry?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a core like defining reason for existence for CocoKind is the idea of like meeting people where they are and making people feel enough, you know, like that is like, I think it's tough in the beauty industry because you're constantly comparing, you're seeing images, you're seeing other people. You know, the biggest creators in the space today, you know, we're still selling an image, you know, we're still selling. It's still the thing that sells the most, right? Is like the idea of like, get this to feel that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I've always really struggled with, you know, and I've always really felt like an outsider on because like I was so tired of that and like don't want to participate in that. And that's why we do keep a little bit of like our identity as like beauty industry outsiders, because we don't feel that way, you know, and we don't want to contribute to that. And so, you know, it's the small things of like just, you know, not using a filter or, and, you know, having people commit to not using filters. Like, I think that's so huge and so understated, like the impact that filters have on everybody's like sense of reality when it comes to skin. You know,
absolutely.
It's really crazy. And I know it's like harmless. It seems harmless, but it is like actually not harmless, you know, especially for the girl who is 15 and dealing with a lot of acne growing up in Michigan and feeling like I couldn't, you know, go to prom because of that, right? Like, so, you know, I think that that's kind of like one of the biggest things of just like, we want to be a brand that like is really always approaching our customers and our community with a lot of warmth and acceptance, and making them feel like enough, you know, at the end of the day. And that I think is like a core part of like why we exist. I think, you know, secondarily, I think in beauty, there's people can pay for whatever they want. You know, sometimes people want to pay for the brand and the celebrity marketing. People want to pay for the packaging. And I think there is room for brands that exist because of like ingredients and formula. And that's where, you know, I feel like for us, like we still offer like a superior formula at the price point that we're at the channels that we're at, you know, and that I think is like still gonna like allow us to have so much of the community that we've built because people try the products and they really do get the results. Like it's not a fluff, you know, product. So like in that way, I think it's like, you know, important to kind of like people can choose to pay whatever they want. Like for CocoKind, like it is going to be about like the formula and the ingredients.
I love that. I love that whole message. And, you know, I was really excited to talk to you today, but with everything you said, I like this episode makes me even more excited because I really value all of your viewpoints. And especially even with the filters, I've done like a full episode just on like how filters can really, you know, mess with your confidence.
It's all that.
You don't even think about it, you know, like,
no,
it does seem so harmless, right? Like, oh, I threw on a fun little filter, especially like when they started out, right? Like on like Snapchat and stuff, it was like the dog filter. Like they were just like fun, harmless filters, but it's evolved into something where it makes people feel like they cannot show up without them, or it further instills that comparison game because you don't even know when someone is wearing a filter at this point.
Yeah.
Right? So it's,
I mean, you've been in the scenario before, I'm sure, where you have met someone in real life and you were like, oh, they have like a normal fine line just like I do. Or they have a normal like texture just like I do. And you would have never known. And I'm like, honestly, it feels bad, but they're relieving to me because I'm like, oh, okay, like I'm not just like on my own. Like, you know, like, but I feel bad saying that. Like I'm relieved that she has wrinkles, but it's like, you know, it's, you don't see that online.
No.
You really don't. And it's like, that is, to me, it's like the only person impacts is you when you're looking at yourself, you know, in your mirror and the self-talk that you have. And that is, you know, I just know from example, right, of like being that little girl or that, you know, young woman in my formative years, like how much it hurt me psychologically. And, you know, I think that's like, it's a hard place that social media is contributing to.
Definitely. But I love what you're doing with CocoKind. I think, you know, everyone probably feels that like, or of just like a safe space to kind of come to and use products. And there is that like pressure, like you mentioned as well, especially when you're dealing with acne, to like always just, there's this pressure to like heal it and get rid of your acne like as fast as possible, not only from yourself, but like also from the outside. And when you're buying products and you have this like hope that this will just be the miracle product, I think that just leads into like such a toxic cycle.
Oh, totally.
So you just being transparent of like, this is the product, this is the ingredient base, like, you know, and all of that, like I love that. And I think overall, it's definitely a huge benefit to the beauty industry and more brands. We need that from much more brands to kind of show that. And like you said, like there's brands for different reasons, ones that, are celebrity endorsed or, are really like a lifestyle type brand where people are buying that brand for the brand, or in this case, right, like more of the community aspect and really the message that you have with it. So that's great to hear. And I guess the last thing I want to ask you, which I ask all guests on this podcast, is what is something that you love about your skin today?
That's a really, I love that question. And I've heard you ask that before, which is so nice. I think I'm really like, I have this like hilarious saying on my smooth forehead club, like because of my retinol, that we have a retinol in the line, and like it's just something that like I feel like my forehead has like a nice smooth glow to it these days that it didn't have before, and I'm really happy about my smooth forehead.
I love that. That's awesome. Well, thank you, Priscilla, so much for coming on Loud Talk with Lavi. It was so great talking to you and getting to know you, and I'm sure anyone listening can say the same. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was great. Well, to anyone listening, thank you for getting loud with us. You can check out new episodes every single Sunday at 7 a.m. MST on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and all streaming platforms. I love you guys all so, so much, and you'll hear from me in the next episode of Loud Talk Lavi. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.